Today on the Money Series from the Jake of All Trades show, we're going to talk about the real estate doom loop and how it's threatening American banks. That's coming up next.
From the streets of San Antonio straight to your wallet, it's Jake's 2 cents on Jake of All Trades.
All right, my name is Kirk. I'm not a financial expert.
But I'm Jake. I am the financial expert. Together, Kirk and I love to talk about the economy, financial markets, and current events, all with the express purpose of helping our listeners build wealth, both today and into the future.
So the Wall Street Journal has announced the end of America. Real estate doom loop threatens America's banks.
Dun, dun, dun.
This was September 6, 2023 by Shane Shiflett and Conrad Putzier. Now, what is a doom loop? So we've been in bad financial crises in the past, but now we're seeing something that may go out of control. That's what I think of when I think of a doom loop. I don't know what you think about, but I think of small, continued little actions that continually go worse and worse and worse. I've heard the term doom loop used all the time. I know many people in the environmental movement use it as like the little doom loops of as we grow and grow, we lead to more and more catastrophe of the earth. As we, you know, I've heard this being used, I think it was coined in 2001, and it's been used a lot. The doom loop of different cultures and countries that are going, like Greece back in the day when they were like going financially spiraling out of control. There's certain European cultures that are, or countries that are now being in a doom loop where it's just, you can't get out. It's, everything's horrible. We're going to be destroyed. So what do you think a doom loop is?
I think a good example that comes to my mind would be like China's population decline because of their one child policy. So that's like a form of a doom loop, because now their repercussions of that are going to be dire for their economy, but it started at one point in time and sort of rippled, like the domino effect, right?
Yeah. So it's something that is definitely to be concerned about. We need to be worried about doom loops. You don't have Wall Street Journal and New York Times quoting doom loops lightly, right? Those guys would never try to scare us a little bit. But what are we talking about when we look at a banking? So we've already had a banking crisis. Do we have to have another one? I mean, come on. Like, what do we got to do? What do we got to do to not have more banking crisis? But what is the banking crisis doom loop, Jake?
So what this article is referring to is the number of local banks. So we're not talking about like Chase and Wells Fargo and Bank of America. We're talking about like your regional bank around the corner have secured a higher percentage of their lending portfolio over the last decade in commercial real estate loans. Now, the problem is that, as we've talked about, the Federal Reserve's raised interest rates over the last year and a half dramatically, from basically zero to now over 5.25%. Now, most, you know, mortgages and commercial loans are, the interest rates are north of 7% now. Mm. And the thing with commercial loans is they're not structured like a regular house mortgage. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, if you would think like, well, if people secured a lot of this commercial property in 2020 when interest rates were near zero, they should be locked in at those low rates. No, that's not typically how commercial loans work. They're usually shorter in duration. A lot of times they have variable interest rates that fluctuate over time. They might also have a balloon payment. So it's very common that a commercial real estate loan will mature after a certain period of time. And so like the borrower has only been making interest payments for the last 5 years. And then at the end of the 5-year period, they got to pay the whole thing. So the risk here and the doom loop that they're referring to is that a lot of these loans are maturing, and with historic rates of vacancies in commercial properties, plus higher interest rates, it kind of creates a potential perfect storm for default on a lot of these loans. And the problem is on regional banks, small banks, is that they don't have the same capital reserves that big banks do. And so what this is referring to is like, okay, what if a lot of, if there's mass amounts of default on these loans, could we see more banks start to fail? Like we saw earlier this year in 2023 with the three banks that failed for a variety of reasons, mostly driven by interest rate increases. But this is kind of like a next wave of speculation about, could this be the next round of bank uncertainty in the United States?
Yeah. So there is, we've actually talked on this show for several years now, the shift that will need to happen in commercial real estate.
Yeah.
Right. So there has to be something new that occurs because it seems pretty obvious. I mean, we're both working and doing this from home. It's just one example. You know, so it's like, okay, so this is kind of common sense that something is going to be shifting here. And even with certain companies requiring returns, like Apple, return to their offices, most are not, or many, or I don't know about most, but many are not. And most of them that are still allowing for more of a hybrid structure. So the whole COVID shift, everything that's been going on has, in terms of getting people to work at home, being comfortable with that, learning and building new systems to make you more comfortable at home, working from home, is shifting the commercial real estate where, like you're saying, you have these higher interest rates and these vacancies. So part of what's happening in this quote unquote doom loop is this idea of, well, we, in order to make more money, we would need to, you know, have more people here leasing out their offices and maybe even raising rents a little bit, but people are already, before the raised rents, cutting their costs as a business by reducing or even eliminating their rents, which means you have all these different vacancies. I mean, there's a famous example that just happened, I think, in June. I don't know if you heard about this, but this is one of the biggest the biggest hotels in San Francisco, a Hilton hotel, the Hilton Union Square. Did you hear about this?
No.
So like the owner
of that hotel, but
yeah. So the owner of that essentially got to a point because of a variety of things, not just this part of it. I think this is part of it, but also because of certain issues with where he was located, where there was like difficulties with homeless people affecting the type, like people didn't want to rent and get condos and rent it out much. So it was just sitting there vacant over and over and over again, and nothing seemed to change. So he just like gave the key. He just, you know, gave the keys to the bank and walked away. That's it. It's like, it's yours now. I'm done. And that was it.
So he defaulted.
He just defaulted. Yeah, he's like, I can't, there's not enough revenue coming in. I can't do it. It's not going to happen. So you have one of the biggest, most successful hotels in San Francisco just wiping their hands and giving it to the bank. And it's like, okay, now what do we do? Now, I do, my understanding, Jake, and correct me, is that these banks do have some, they build in a little bit of, what's the margin or something for like, you know, now that they own the collateral, which is the real estate itself, the way they structure the deal is there is a, they do have a little bit of wiggle room. So it's not like it's zero that they're getting, right? They are getting the actual product for one.
Right. They get the physical structure back.
Yeah.
I think the challenge though, is that the thing that's different this time is that people don't want that structure because we're talking about like large buildings, right?
Yeah.
This article in particular references a lot of office buildings in Manhattan. Those are huge office buildings that if a company has cut their office, personnel by 50%, then their footprint in that office space has been cut by that much. And so now you have probably multiple floors of an office building that aren't needed anymore. And so there's carrying cost associated with having that physical piece of property. So the bank might get the piece of property back and it's worth something, but if they can't find another buyer, they can't rent it to somebody else, they're going to have to pay taxes to maintain the property. I mean, there's all sorts of carrying costs that are associated. So while it is helpful, it's still somewhat of a crisis for the loan to default and for them to receive a piece of physical property. Because a bank doesn't want to just own a bunch of physical property, because they're in the business of providing money to people. And they have a difficult time doing that if all their assets are physical structures that can't be liquidated.
So what does this mean for the everyday person, right? Like, how does this affect normal people? Is it like the way that 2008 will, and that there's going to be a huge decline? You know, again, doom loop seems catastrophic to me.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to lead to the destruction of America, the end of the world. Western civilization will collapse. Aliens will abduct us, and we will go further and further into the pits of hell. That's what a doom loop, like, I don't know what else a doom loop.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you're just like it's a whirlwind where you're just going deeper and deep. I mean, to me, it's into just, yeah. I mean, I've, you know, been kind of jokingly somber about this because I think that it's bad, but I don't think it's doom loop worthy. I don't know. What do you think?
So, yeah, I think, and I'm just speculating, right? But to answer the first question is like, okay, for those people that usually listen to this show, they're probably like, well, I don't deal with commercial real estate, right? I don't care. But I think what this means is 3/4 of the loans that we're talking about are held by banks that have less than $250 billion in assets, which is a small regional bank. So
is that like a Frost in San Antonio?
Yeah, like a Frost, or maybe even smaller, right? Like a Bank of San Antonio.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's how they would try to invest some of their money.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think one of the problems is it might be harder as an individual to secure financing for stuff like a car loan or a new mortgage, right? Because it's very common that you want to go to your regional bank because they usually offer better rates and, you know, they know the market a bit better. The other thing that might happen is we might start to see a consolidation of a lot of these small banks gobbled up by bigger banks. So there's fewer options available for you for banking. So your own regional bank that you've been used to going to might be bought by Chase because they don't have enough revenue anymore. And so those are things I think that might affect the everyday person. Now, I think there's some opportunities here that are important to talk about because there are private investors with lots and lots of money, right? Yeah. And so there could be attractive real estate investment opportunities long-term that are now significantly discounted because the bank is in trouble. So the financial institution is in a position where they've got to liquidate property and investors still have a lot of money, right? Now, we've seen cash reserves decline from COVID, but there's still a lot of money floating around in the economy that's just liquid money. Even big companies are carrying huge cash balances. So the liquidity's there. We just might start to see a shift of powers when it comes to real estate dominance away from banking ownership and more into like private equity investment into this kind of stuff. It would be my thought.
Yeah. That's what I wanted to talk about the doom loop thing. Like, I mean, to some degree, this type of thing has to happen in terms of the economy because, you know, you don't want people to keep on the same, like builders and investors to keep doing the same things they've done in a new environment. Right. So in other words, we have this post-COVID world where people are working from home, they're changing their habits. Things are going to shift in the way that the whole American economy operates. We're now adding AI and robots to things, you know, so we need a shift. And that may mean in the short term, there's going to be suffering in certain sectors. But then, as you're saying, I think what you'll hopefully get is other sectors that will kind of go in and buy up those cheap properties. Like, I guarantee you there's groups of billionaires that I know you love who are just kind of going like this with San Francisco, right? In New York City, because there's just no way that long term those coastal regions, which are successful for a variety of reasons, that they're not going to ever come back.
Right.
That doesn't make sense. Like, they're port cities. They have some of the greatest schools on the planet there. So that means you have some of the best technical minds in the world on the both those coasts. You have high talent. People want to live there because it's got the arts and it's got culture. I mean, it's just like and then it's got the network effect. Yes, there's some bad, I think there's some bad policies, particularly in San Francisco, that's causing some harm. But
yeah.
I think that's going to change. And then what, you know, in the long term, because people aren't going to want it. Like they're going to want, and then you're going to have power brokers essentially who come in and take care of that opportunity for hopefully for the better. You know, I mean, that's the hope anyway, but that to me, it just seems like we needed a kind of downturn in commercial real estate. Like, it doesn't make sense to keep putting money in the same way. Like, it needs to change the way commercial real estate has been built, how they operate, what they think they're going to make their money back from. Now, like, why not convert a lot of these into high-end condos?
That's what I was going to say. The composition of these buildings could totally change as well, right?
Yeah.
We have a housing problem in this country. We don't have enough houses and we don't have enough that are being built, right?
Yeah.
But now we have huge pieces of property that sit vacant. Maybe they need to be converted. And that's where one of these private investors could come in, because they have, you know, bukus of money. And if they can pick up a property for cheap, then they can invest a little bit in infrastructure to shift, you know, the purpose of the building from commercial to residential or mixed use. And now you've shifted areas of those major metropolitan cities away from exclusively business to like mixed use areas, which might help population density. There's a variety of things that could spur economic growth in a way that is new, but necessary, because like you said, we can't continue the same trajectory forever. That's the same with the economic cycle, right? That's why countries go through recessions and they go through growth periods. That's the natural wave of cycle. So that this is a good article to bring to light. And I like that the title is so clickbaity, because it does sound so bad, right? But there are some opportunities here that I think we don't need to be too afraid of. I think the other thing we haven't talked about either is that interest rates have likely peaked. Mm-hmm. And so it is possible that when a lot of these loans start to mature, because in this article, they talk about like the forecast for the maturing loans, and it's not like they're all coming due in 2023. Mm-hmm. Over the next 5 or 6 years, these loans are going to mature. It's possible that interest rates are cut between now and then. So this is, you know, a lot of speculation, but it provides unique opportunities as well.
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing to take away for me personally, is just the, you know, well, we're still in this flux stage. So what's going to happen next? I think it'd be cool. I don't know if you think about this, but I think it'd be cool if like some of these mega corporations would buy out these buildings, right? And they could have some of their workers, if they wanted to, get a more affordable housing, you know, and have the option of working from home, or they could have an office two floors down if they want to.
Like in the building?
Yeah, in the same building. Really cool. Yeah, I would love that, where it's like I can work from home when I want to. I can go into the office if I need to get a distraction free. You know, that would be, and then I can, you know, because it's in a big building downtown, there's cool restaurants right nearby. Like, it all kind of happens together. I mean, there could be downsides to that, of course, because some people might want to get away from work sometimes, right? But I could see it as like a really good option for like new hires, right? For people who are, you know, as an option, not something you have to, I don't know if it has to be required or anything, but just like, hey, you know, you're moving to a new city. We have this place here. You could rent it out at these, you know, prices, which are discounted because you work with, like, I think those would be great deals for mega corporations.
It's kind of like you could add that as a compensation structure, right? Like that's a employee benefit. Hey, we give you substantially discounted housing in a great place. It's not like it's, you know, Section 8 housing. It's a wonderful building, and you're welcome to have this as an option. And now, you know, it's a way to get more compensation without having to pay taxes on it, because it's like a housing subsidy, which is typically not taxable to the employee. I think there's a lot of opportunities there that you could create mixed use developments. And I think people would really, you know, like,
well, especially Silicon Valley,
they don't want to commute, you know, hours at a time from different places. If it's a great place to live and the work is good and you can still work in your private space, it just happens to be that your office is also two floors down. I mean, there's still some separation there.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I think not everybody would want it. It would just be an option for some people. And like I said, I would think it'd be optimal for new hires, because I think after working for several years at a place, you might want to get a little separation from that area, from, you know, you go down your elevator, it's the same people, right? Like, it'd be nice to have a new community somewhere else like that. I could see, but at the beginning, when you're a new engineer, for instance, at a tech company, I think that, you know, you're maybe 26, 27. I think that'd be awesome for several years to do that and then save up some money. And, you know, by the way, oil industries have done this for like two centuries now, where basically you'll get these shanty towns created for all these oil workers, and they create the houses for you. You do that, they pay you a lot. They, you know, usually they usually pay them pretty well. I know somebody who did this, like this happened during the shale boom here in America, where it's like they just built these little cheap houses. It was mostly, you know, just guys working out there by themselves. And some of them earned like buku bucks because they weren't spending much. Like, pretty much everything was provided for them. And they just did it for a stint of several years, or, you know, some more and less than others, whatever. But I think those types of things, you know, on a higher level where it's not roughneck stuff, you know, it's more like, you know, cushy and enjoyable and luxurious, you know, to attract a different type of worker is a smart move. I think that's, I think that makes sense to me. Now, I'm not in a commercial real estate, you know, position to invest any money, but hey, commercial real estate, you should listen to Kirk. I'm telling you, I know what I'm doing. And heck, you could even have like, you know, like a rec center as one floor where it's like laser tag, and like you could just do so much stuff. Like, it's so creative. Yeah. Enjoy this new opportunity to take these things. Now, the challenge is going to be, we don't live in a free market. So like, what has to happen is, what's going to happen, and is my prediction, is you're going to have these power brokers who are going to have to make deals with the banks plus local politicians to try to make something happen. Because you're going to have to rezone, reconfigure some of the laws, some of those things. So it's a lot harder than what I think it should be, because I think we should have a free market, but that's another discussion. Yeah. But I still think it's going to happen. It'll just be harder than it otherwise would have had to be.
Right. So we'll be curious to hear you as the listener. We would love to hear, when you hear the term doom loop, does it scare you, or have we provided a color of context that might give a little hope or optimism? Because higher interest rates aren't all bad.
Yeah. Right? Well, and there's a reason they're doing that. I mean, they're trying to slow down. You know, we're one of the few countries in the world right now, Western countries, who are not really suffering from a recession. Like, Germany's really suffering right now. And I think like, people have been shocked at the versatility of the American. Now, having said that, we could jump right into a recession right now. Like, we hang this up and it's like, recession. Oh, crap. So I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm just saying we have proven a little bit of resiliency so far.
Right.
And buoyancy. Yeah. Right. Like, we adapt a little bit, the American peeps.
A little more adaptable than you think we would be. But also today, the United Auto Workers.
There's some signs. So
that's 13,000 employees that are not working in one of the largest industries in the country. But we'll see how long it lasts.
Yeah, we'll see not only how long it lasts, but we'll see how long these companies are not going to start really investing more in robots.
Right.
Robotics. Like, I think they're kind of biting themselves in the butt a little bit on that. Like, same thing with the writer's strike and the actor strike. It's like, at some point, at some point, you know, I know everybody hates mega companies, but they do have to actually make money. Like, they can't not make a profit. Otherwise they have to shut down just like any other company. They usually can gobble up other things to survive for longer than a small or medium sized company. But just because you have you know, billions in revenue doesn't mean you're actually profiting billions. In fact, they right. usually don't. They're usually yeah. much more margin than you think.
That's the difference between businesses that report losses versus, you know, like they still make money to pay things, but that doesn't mean they're profitable.
Yeah, exactly. And they can really, like, sometimes that's what happens with long-term economic problems, right? It's like, we don't realize that these are not worthwhile companies and they're kind of just gobbling up resources because they're so big and people keep investing in them. It's like, no, but you're not making any profit yet. Like, mm-hmm. and that's a yeah. problem. So you need to get to that point. So yeah, I mean, well, it's, we're in an interesting time. We've said that since the beginning of the show. Maybe that's just the life, you know, we always think
5 years.
Yeah. Now, so six, I think we're just, years. You know, we'll see, I'm very curious what's going to happen. You know, it's election yeah. year coming up. So
yeah.
Yep. The okay. sign.
All right. All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Money Series on the Jake of All Trades show. Be sure to check us out on our website at jakes2cents.com. Take care. We'll see you next time.
Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor. Fixed insurance products and services offered through CES Insurance Agency. Actual performance and results will vary. These interviews do not constitute a recommendation as to the suitability of any investment for any person or persons having circumstances similar to those portrayed. Consult a financial advisor regarding your specific circumstances.